An unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Good morning.
Yesterday morning, I learned I was giving a talk this morning. But if the fruit of practice, I did not go into full panic mode by a heavy dose of annoyance. We touched a little bit on some of the areas that I think we use the term are kind of more mystical, or other beings, other realms. So I decided to look at a couple of those sections a bit. So I'm going to read this first part. When one displays the Buddha Mudra with one's whole body and mind, sitting upright in this samadhi, even for a short time, everything in the entire Dharma world becomes Buddha Mudra, and all space in the universe completely becomes enlightenment. Therefore, it enables Buddha Tathagatas to increase the Dharma joy of their own original grounds and renew the adornment of awakening. Simultaneously, all living beings of the Dharma world in the 10 directions in 6 realms become clear and pure in body and mind, realize great emancipation, and their own original face appears. At that time, all things together awaken to supreme enlightenment and utilize Buddha body, immediately go beyond the culmination of awakening, and sit upright under the kingly Bodhi tree. At the same time, they turn the incomparable great Dharma wheel and begin expressing ultimate and unfabricated profound prajna. One of the things that struck me about that is it's a very Mahayana sentiment. It's not just about my own liberation. So all beings, whatever worlds there might be, and it speaks to the power of practice to influence things beyond ourselves. I was trying to think, Dogen, he comes from a poetry background. There's a lot of poetics in his writing. I don't recall anything of Ru Jing's, but someone correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think Ru Jing spoke like this as far as I know. When we do things, I don't know if there's... been a long time since I looked at any of that Alaya seed house storehouse things, but I think there's like a collective seed storehouse that maybe is we contribute to in our practice. I remember a long time ago I read some interview with the Dalai Lama, and someone was asking him about these, because I guess in Tibetan Buddhism there's some pretty trippy imagery and different beings, and asking him about this, and he said, well, I've never seen any of these, but I have this friend who is, I don't know, maybe a Rinpoche or something, and he tells me he's seen these, he had some name for them, these kind of flying beings. Scientists tell us that most of the universe is made up of something we can't see. We don't know what it is. We call it dark matter because we don't have another word for it. And I think a lot of us have had some experience in our life of something that just didn't fit into some rational explanation, something that indicated that there's more going on here than meets the eye. So we don't know. When I first was talking to Danielle Taranio about doing koan study with him, he asked me to bring in something short, maybe from Dogen or somewhere else, that was either perplexing or bugged me or something like that. So I brought in this line from Uchiyama Roshi. I'm sure it was from Opening the Hand of Thought that it really struck me when I first read it. Uchiyama's line was, everything I encounter is myself. Everything I encounter is myself. And that really kind of bugged me and kind of perplexed me and kind of intrigued me. So I took that line in, and he had said that whatever I brought in, then we'd kind of make it into a koan. well, we'll just take out these two words and make it into everything is my life. Everything is my life. And that was, and I sat with that, and I highly recommend it. And it's like, you know, and the thing about koan study is you take it with you wherever you go all day long, whatever is in front of you. Everything is my life. So every Friday morning we would have, there was Dokusan there. There was, we'd sit at 6 o'clock, just usually a pretty small group. They had a Wednesday evening thing that was kind of their main event. So Friday was usually a handful, sometimes more. And sometime after the first sitting or into the second one, Danielle would go in the house into the Dokusan room. And then about 5 minutes later, the Tanto would go out, Gregory, and he'd wait out on the outside porch. And I love the communication with the bells. It was so nice. He'd wait to hear Danielle's bell inside, and then he'd do a roll down, and then he'd wait, hear the response to the other bell, and then he'd do two bells to let the next person know it's their turn to come out on the porch. Sometimes in the winter, it would be like 35 degrees on the porch. You'd stand there and literally watch your breath. But I loved it. I mean, you'd feel so alive and you're waiting. And if Gregory or Charlie were ahead of you, you knew you were going to be there for at least 20 or 25 minutes. And you'd be a little anxious because you have to present your koan and your time out there. And then finally the bell rings, and then you ring twice to let the next person know it's their turn to come out and freeze their butt off. And you go inside, and you bow to the person as they're coming out, and you go in, the Dokusan room is nice and warm. It's nice. And you present. And I don't remember, I didn't sit with that one for super long, and I don't even remember the interactions in Dokusan at that particular time. That was a long time ago. Everything is my life, you know, whether I see it or not, whether I feel connected or not. That was really valuable. And I didn't realize until sometime quite a bit later, another one that kind of expanded on that for me or deepened it for me a little bit was when I was assigned to sit with Mu, Kuan Mu. And I had read some things about people sitting with Mu, and it's not helpful to hear other people's responses or what they presented, because then you think that's it. Just whatever the teacher asks, or just say, ooh, just ooh, you know. And after a few weeks of that, you know, Danielle was. So then he started giving some little demonstrations of how you might work with that. He pointed something in the room and say, is that Mu? Not Mu? What is Mu? What is Mu? There's something that happens, but it's not something maybe that seems so rational. So let's see, there's the second part. So Dogen goes on to say, at this time, because earth, grasses, and trees, fences, walls, tiles, and pebbles, all things in the Dharma realm in 10 directions carry out Buddha work. Therefore, everyone receives the benefit of wind and water movement caused by this functioning. So it's everything, pebbles, wind and water movement, all just being themselves and all benefiting each other and all benefiting us. And there's a footnote that I found interesting. And he's talking about first part of this, when one displays the Buddha Mudra, the passage that begins with, which we read, when one displays the Buddha Mudra, reflects the non-anthropocentric basis of Buddhist thought and practice. The active realization, embodied and supported in self-fulfilling samadhi, includes not only humans and other creatures, and even the land and soil and the grasses and trees, fences and walls, tiles and pebbles, Dogen mentions below. Even things usually considered inanimate objects in Western philosophy vitally partake of this awakening and mutually resonate to encourage the subtle, mysterious Buddha guidance or influence in all of us. the Buddhist view of our environment and all the things that make it up as alive and intimately connected with us, rather than a collection of dead objects. It's become of great interest to modern thinkers concerned with threats to the environmental degradation and the underlying attitudes that have helped endanger ecology. This is one of the things that's long attracted me to Buddhism, is that it's not anthropocentric. It does include everything. So, lastly, Dogen says, this Zazen is one with all existence and completely permeates all time. It performs everlasting Buddha guidance with the inexhaustible Dharma world in the past, present, and future. So we might not think that we're sitting doing anything that's influencing anything. Dogen assures us, though, that we are. It's real. And I think, you know, you sit over time, you see that it's not just about ourselves. It affects everything. And we don't know if Dogen's talking literally or if he, in some of the more mystical things, is just underlying just how powerful the practice is and the influence of the practice. It seems to be the end of my notes. So. Might have time for some more Zazen.
We might have time for some questions or comments.
Okay.
Can you see Zach? Zach has his hands in Gosho.
Oh, okay. Zach? Yes, I see Zach.
Hi, Liam. That was good. I'm having a hard time getting past, is it my life is everything?
Everything is my life.
Everything is my life. When I first heard it, I thought, everything is my life. But then I thought about it, no, it's everything is my life. I'm assuming it means everything is connected. And I'm connected to everything, and everything is connected to each else, which is one of my favorite things about Buddhism is, I guess that's, we're talking about emptiness there. But I thought it was funny, there's kind of two ways to emphasize that. And I prefer the latter. Is that the way you take it?
The latter. And it's hard to talk about. It's something I'd really recommend trying it out with having that as a koan that you carry around during the day and whatever's in front of you. Everything is my life. This is my life, whatever that might be. And I think it's more intimate than connected. I don't think connected is really quite adequate of a word, or interconnected even, I'm thinking lately. That it's more intimate than that.
The Thich Nhat Hanh uses the word or interbeing. Do you think, does that get closer anyway, even if it, whether it gets actually to it or not?
I think so. Oh, Zach disappeared.
So did Steve, if that's who that was. There were two people.
We're one.
Right, but there were two below us.
Oh, really?
Yes, mm-hmm. There were two below us, and they both disappeared for some reason. So here we are.
Well, they'll probably be right back.
Right.
Oh, yeah, Zach was certainly there. I didn't know Steve was there.
It's that unseen world. It's very mysterious.
It's mysterious.
Interbeing, I think, does. Mary?
Well, you just reminded me of a lot of things that was useful, is useful, and I think it is a good practice. You remind me of Leslie James uses the phrase, "This is the Dharma too," which is a little more of a distance, mm. But she uses it particularly when she's irritated or upset. Mm. and she wants to sort of turn away from something, you know, the not mine. Well, it is hers. And so she uses that phrase to remind herself that, you know, to include whatever. The example that she uses is that her husband, Keith, he can't sit anymore because of various issues with his back. But he can go for long, slow, meditative walks, and he does that. And she's no good at that. She just, you know, she walks to get somewhere. And she was standing at the kitchen window one morning at their place at the paved end of the road into Tassajara, and watching him go on one of his walks and walking away. And she just felt jealous and sorry for herself and irritated and so on. And then she reminded herself that this too is the Dharma. And so she kind of, you know, she turned the light inwardly and examined what was going on with her, what was this jealousy and so on about. And it became actually an interesting inquiry. So it's not exactly the same as what you're talking about, but it has some of that flavor of, you know, inclusivity. But the other thing is that the first koan I ever had was Norman gave me when my first practice period at Green Gulch, and I went and told him that I found myself really interested in my breath from the beginning to the end, each breath. And in typical Norman fashion, he sometimes sits and it's like there's this mountain in front of you and it's just imperturbable. And you know, and he says he wasn't laughing, but he says this is important. And I was kind of scared. And then he said, so from now on, when every time you sit zazen, with every single breath, say to yourself, what is the breath? And I said, every breath? He said, yes. And come back and tell me about it. So I went and did it, or mostly did it. And I came back and I told him about it. I told him about my thoughts about breath, about how we're interconnected and everybody shares breath and I don't know what all. And he said, that's nice. Keep going. You know, and then once I did it opened up, but I'll never forget that, going back and giving him my ideas. He was very polite, he was very nice about it. he didn't say, what did you say, Daniel? Says, that's not quite it.
That's not it. That's it. Not another week.
Well, I don't know, maybe that, I don't know about, Zach had a dental appointment at some point, and I can't remember if it was right around now or after. I remember him saying he'd try to come to lecture, so that's probably it. And if it was Steve, he probably had to get back to work. I don't know.
Hey.
Do we have time?
Oh, yeah, we have time. You have a clock there.
It's 10:35.
We have until 10:50 before we do more zazen.
Let's talk.
Yes, Kate.
Thank you, Liam. I had a question and a comment, and I'm trying to remember now because I was really listening to what everyone else was saying. The question was about faith. I'm returning to this question because I think about it. And is it a matter of faith for you, or is it a matter of experience that creates a faith in these unseen influences, profound and subtle influences, I think is what I love that line in the Bendo Wa, that the infinite, profound and subtle something, it goes on. So that's my question.
Well, I mean, through experience, I have a faith in the practice, and I have, you could say, a faith in the Dharma, a kind of trust. But at the same time, with some of the other imagery things in Dogen, I think it's really valuable to just don't know, that don't know mind, and just be open. I mean, some of Dogen's things, Uji or Mountains and Waters, I mean, I mean, I have a clue as to what he's talking about, but I can enjoy it the same way I'd enjoy like a Bach cello suite or something. What does that Bach cello suite mean? What is that about? it's just beautiful. And it's up inspiring and uplifting.
Great. And to follow up a little with the wondrous Dharma, I mean, everything is the Dharma. And since we've been studying this, Sunny and I often walk the dog almost daily out on the trails, and we'll see the poplars moving in the breeze, or he'll point out some beautiful thing or some curious thing on the trail. And we've been saying to each other, it's the wondrous Dharma. However, when he begins to criticize my nephew for not having a job, then is that the wondrous Dharma? I have to not turn away from that as well. And I notice I tend to want the wondrous Dharma to be only the beautiful golden poplars in waving in the wind.
Sure. Yeah.
That is easier. And it's also wonderful to see disagreement or conflict as the Dharma, because then something softens in me with that kind of attention, and my response is different, and our relationship changes to it. So that's my comment.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
Oh, I have one more. You know, when you were talking about, there was some reference to, you know, all the Buddhas, infinite numbers of Buddhas, I don't remember exactly, but and then you said this is a Mahayana understanding, and I just saw these visions of the Lotus Sutra with, you know, infinite niyutis of Buddhas arising, surrounded by millions of bodhisattvas, and they were on pink lotus, or they were on thrones maybe, but maybe the Dogen movie wasn't that far off, maybe. Anyway, that's what came to me. And I wondered if that image arose for you.
No. I didn't really have an image exactly. No.
Can I tell one more Norman story?
Oh, yeah.
Quickly. It was one of my first experiences here of someone outside of this temple coming to lecture, and it was a warm day, and Norman was sitting right here, and he was lecturing. I'd never met him before. He was lecturing about something, and the windows were open, and the ice cream truck came by. He didn't miss a beat. He stopped, he put his fingers up, and he kind of did this along with the sound of the truck, and then the truck passed, and he put his hands down, and he continued right into the next thing he was saying. And I was so impressed. And so the ice cream truck is the wondrous Dharma. It was a very vivid, I carry that memory with me a lot.
Yeah. Just present with whatever, each thing as it changes.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I know I heard something about the Dalai Lama when he was, I think, participating in some of the talks in Ireland during the Troubles or something. He could go from, you know, being in tears at one moment and then laughing uproariously a minute later from something else. And it's just even with each thing.
Don't you think you have to be able to laugh in the middle of it sometimes?
Wow.
When you were, that's another memory, the Kazantzakis, the author of Zorba the Greek, among many other wonderful books. Anyway, Kazantzakis writes, maybe in his autobiography or something, anyway, he writes about the, there's a wake and the coffin is in the middle of the courtyard of a home on Crete. And the three young men of the family are supposed to stay up all night and guard the coffin and be with it or whatever, be with the body. And they're drinking rakshi, which is like a hard liquor. And after a while, one of them, they're just sort of sitting there, there's nothing to do really. And after a while, one of them says, "What do you think, guys? Do you think we could vault the coffin?" And the next thing they knew, they were vaulting the coffin.
Vaulting?
Vaulting, jumping over it.
Oh, no.
As in pole vaulting, but no poles. I don't know. But I like that image. It's that similar, you know, the Dalai Lama, you know, finding something to laugh at in the middle of talking about the troubles. Well, it's up to you. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. Thank you very much.